shotglassdigital.com. Rebel Force Radio is brought to you in part by Little Debbie Snacks and their new Cosmic Cupcakes. To learn more, go to littledebbie.com/cosmic cupcakes. With movies, gaming, books, comics, and collecting, a Little Debbie snack makes everything a little sweeter. Little Debbie, official snack of the galaxy.
DorksideToys.com. For the latest Star Wars action figures, Marvel, G.I. Joe, and more, visit DorksideToys.com.
A small rebel force has penetrated the shield and landed on Endor.
This is where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
You know, we spent so much time together and recorded so much together in person, face-to-face, man-to-man, that this somehow seems wrong.
Oh.
You know, I don't want to be separated by miles and a Skype call that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. You know how that goes.
Well, you know, voice over the internet is it's a dicey proposition, but... You know what? I don't care, Jason. As long as you and me can reconnect each and every week over the boards, whether it be in person, in very cool places like Northern California.
Yeah.
Or if it is just simply over the internet, it's all good for me. But yes, this is a recap show.
That's right. We are recapping here on Rebel Force Radio this week's show for Friday, August 8th, 2014. Our big trip out west. Oh, yes.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
See, now I finally know what this song means. Once you go out there, it's...
It does have an effect on you in a profound way. Jason, as you and me were out there in Northern California driving amongst the... grassy hills and mountains that make up the terrain of Northern California, I felt like it does call to me. And I think it's my Irish roots. You know, it's those rolling green hills.
Oh, they weren't so green.
Well, no, I guess they are suffering from a little bit of a drought.
They were rolling.
Yeah, they were rolling. We were rolling too.
Yeah. We were definitely. Sometimes when we didn't want to be, there's a lot of hills. Especially in, you know, you just don't think about the, you know, the more suburban areas and what that's, imagine living there where your house is on these hills. It's just amazing, to have a city that is in such a roly poly place. It makes for a beautiful visit, but I don't know if I'd like to live there. I talked to someone at work where I work, and that she used to live in San Francisco, and she would say, you know, it's very difficult to park, so you have to, like, you know, you learn to turn your wheel, right, when you park your car a certain way so it doesn't roll on you and stuff. I just would not be good at that. I wouldn't be good at that. I'd have to live out on a ranch like George and our friend Steve Sansweet. I'd have to do that somewhere where I've got some flat surfaces to park and I can spread out.
So this is great. That's why we went to San Francisco. We were on the road to Rancho Obi-Wan. It's been a long overdue trip for us here at Rebel Force Radio. Of course, longtime listeners know I've been out there a few times, but this is the first time the show proper, meaning myself and host Jason Swank, made the trip together. Long overdue, and we're going to tell you... We're going to take you with us every step of the way of this trip because it was truly awesome.
Began on Thursday morning with a flight. We were able to find a flight for me to get me from Akron Canton to Chicago, where I rendezvoused with my pal, my good friend and yours from Chicago in Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. That's right. We met up at O'Hare Airport in the wee early morning hours of Thursday. And Jason, you know, I know you were nervous. You thought I'd miss the flight because past history has not done my reputation any good.
Well, Jim does like to play it really, really close. And so I was just a little bit nervous that there might be a missed flight there. But you were nervous that I would just call you up and say, yeah, I can't go.
Yeah, that's why I had to get the flight insurance for you.
Right. I see how much trust there is between the two of us.
You know what? For peace of mind, it was $16 well spent. So right. That's all I got to say. But we didn't need to use it. Jason was there. I was so excited. And I said to you as we were waiting in line for boarding, I said, I hope you are up for hitting the ground in San Francisco running, because we have an interview scheduled as soon as we land, pretty much, is how it worked out.
Yeah.
At Lucasfilm headquarters with none other than Dave Filoni himself. So already we were on the clock. So the flight was pretty good.
The flight was good. Nothing it was actually very, very smooth, unlike the flight back. But the flight out there was really smooth. We chatted it up. In fact, I bought a special device to load up with a bunch of movies and TV shows and whatnot. I figured I'd be sitting there, you know, next to you watching my iPad. But we didn't need it. We did not need it. We've got the gift of gab. People know that. And I don't know about that guy, that poor schlep next to me on the plane. He looked like he just kind of wanted to zone out and get some Z's. But you and I, we were talking the wars. We were talking RFR. We were laying some groundwork for our hosting of the behind-the-scenes stage at Celebration, starting to think very seriously about all of that. So we had a great flight. It was really fun.
It was excellent. But we did get stuck on that tarmac for a little while, like it does happen. And we ended up running up against the clock a little bit because, like I said, we had to get straight out to Lucasfilm headquarters for an 11:30 interview, sharp, with Dave Filoni.
And you know, the one thing that didn't help, too, is that the rental car facility is two highway exits further than the airport.
Yeah, now that really comes into play on our return flight back.
But it didn't help on the way there either.
Well, it certainly did put us off at a little bit of a distance. And once we finally found the 101, we were headed into San Francisco, the lovely city of San Francisco. We passed by Candlestick Park and other famous landmarks that dot the San Francisco terrain. But we made it there just like right on time for our interview with Dave Filoni. And we had a very tight window with him. So we were greeted at Lucasfilm and brought into a theater, which was really excellent because acoustically it was perfect in there. And within minutes of our arrival, I mean, I was still shaking off the airplane at this point, in walks Dave Filoni, cowboy hat on head, the Wolfpack logo proudly displayed on his chest, on his T-shirt, actually.
We don't know about.
We don't. I think I was the only one in the room with an actual Wolfpack tattoo. But for all we know, Dave has the full chest tattoo of the Wolfpack logo. Wouldn't that be cool? Hey, guys, surprise.
Yeah, or maybe he just has it carved into his chest hair, you know, like like yard art.
So, hey, who's your landscaper? So it was really great. We got to actually sit down at the home of Star Wars, Lucasfilm, located at the Letterman Digital Arts Center, a.k.a. the LDAC, in the heart of San Francisco's Presidio Park. You've heard about it so many times, not only on this show, but on Star Wars DVD special features, features on StarWars.com, various interviews. Well, here we are. We are there. And in walks Dave Filoni, and it was really cool because right away the conversation went to, well, what brings you here? And we told him, well, you know, we are on the road to Rancho Obi-Wan. And so the interview started. We sat down, and we were mid-conversation with Dave. He was just kind of talking about what he loves so much about Rancho Obi-Wan.
You will be exhausted.
Yeah.
You cannot imagine. Like, I've been there for 3 hours, and at the third hour, I finally make it to the back of the building, and you finally made it through just once, and it's just, you're exhausted. Yeah. Anything you dreamed merchandising wise is there. And right. Even cooler are the unexpected things you're going to see, like, you know, things that have been homemade by fans. Those are kind of the most special things that you can't believe when you look at it that a fan made. You just can't believe it. These metal bent starships that look every bit as good as practical models that guys down in Mexico made. I mean, that's, and I have to say, like, for me as well, of the things that I've been given over the years, you know, the stuff like the helmets that Kevin Ware makes, and, you know, someone gave me a Cad Bane helmet, someone gave me a Commando Droid helmet, like, that they're homemade is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that much more meaningful. But you will be exhausted by the time you get through Rancho. It is quite a special place for sure.
I can't wait.
By the way,
yeah.
Look at this modern technology. Well, this you guys probably put in your backpack.
Yeah.
No more box taped up.
No more taped up box. The box hasn't really made an appearance.
That's
really
so
since
sad.
Yeah, since you belittled us and
terrible.
And shamed the box.
But you know what? I think it's like just shows that you were doing it back before it became so much easier to do these type of things. And, you know, I noticed there are like countless podcasts now, podcasts that look at every bit of minutia. And, you know, before you iPhones and everything of that age, you had to really know what you were doing. And mm-hmm. And I still will say, and people get upset with me, but I think that there's a production level that you guys have always been able to obtain that is very impressive. The opening titles and the way, I mean, it is every bit, I don't know what you call it, like a real show. That seems so derogatory, but it feels like this is a produced thing. This is actually happening, and this is like, you know, this is a real show. And I think for a while in the beginning, like, podcasts were seen as kind of like a little deviant thing. Mm-hmm. They weren't like actual radio, satellite radio. But now, I mean, especially new generations, podcasts are a major source of information, a major source of news. And, you know, I've got a guy on my crew downstairs. All he listens to are different, like, video game podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And he watches them, too. So imagine everything we're doing, but all on camera. And he literally watches people play video games. I don't understand it.
Seriously.
Right? And no, I mean, like, side scrollers, right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
No, my kids do the generation. Same thing. They do the same thing. That's their entertainment, watching other people play video games.
Very
really.
Bizarre.
But I think they do it to feel it out to see whether or not they want to get the game and everything. But me and Jason were talking about this on the flight over here. Is just that
that must have been quite a flight.
Oh yeah, my God! We're
whoever
on
was three. Next to you guys.
that poor guy that was trying to sleep.
Yeah.
In the business suit.
Oh my God!
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We were talking about all kind of things.
Yeah, four and a half
one
hours.
Thing we
straight.
Did talk about was, you know, it was how we were able to kind of show that it is a legitimate medium, podcasting, mm-hmm. and it's not just a voice blog, you know.
Yeah.
It can be actually a
that's
big
an interesting way
produced
to put it, voice blog, yeah.
And so, you know, I like it when people come up and they say to me, hey, you know, I was listening to you guys when I was 15. I'm 23 now,
crazy?
And I have my own podcast, and you guys inspired me. So I think that's pretty cool.
And dangerous.
And dangerous.
It is very, yeah, the, you know, with great power.
It's
great responsibility.
Absolutely. But it is true. I mean, the technology has made it easier. I mean, just like what you do, you think back to the first series you were doing. You're on your second series.
Yeah,
and just how
no easier.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
It's no easier.
Well, I wanted to ask.
Any easier at all.
I was thinking, easier. You know, about.
You call this easy?
So what would be one thing that you learned from the first series mm-hmm. that in your head you thought, okay, well, I'm not going to make that mistake again? Or, or put it more positively, what was something that where you said, I've got to remember this because this worked so well?
Oh, I think there are so many things. I mean, when we started Clone Wars, it was, you know, 2005. We're almost a decade out from that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, doing a CGTV series on the scale of Clone Wars had never even been attempted before. I mean, there was a Starship Troopers TV show that, you know, was kind of in that same realm. But it was much more leaning with this could be photorealistic kind of thing as much as they could. And it wasn't stylized what we were trying to do in Clone Wars. And, you know, I think for Killian Plunkett and I, who are still working on Rebels today, We didn't really fully understand when we did graphic shapes and characters, you know, the dangers and how wooden it can look like. If the rigging systems weren't making the flesh really pliable, it really affects how you interact with the characters. Everything was new and experimental. We had to have a large amount of cloth on Anakin Skywalker to make his costume work, you know, which, you know, really was something that was pretty new back then, definitely for TV series. We had to have, you know, we didn't have moving hair, which you guys talked about at length on your podcast for a long time. So much so that when hair finally moved, it was like an event.
It was. You know? It was that chase. I remember, yeah. I think it was the chase between Anakin and who was that going through the, I'm trying to remember, but yeah, we remember the moment.
Oh, there I was know.
We remember the hair.
I know. And so there were many things that like we learned along the way, and I think the great things about Clone Wars is it starts one way and it ends completely differently. It's still the same characters, same show, but it looks finally by the end, season 4, 5, and 6, like I wanted it to look in season 1. But it took developing technology, it took our own artistic knowledge and education to get us where we needed to be to make that show, I think, really come alive. You know, it's been fascinating with Clone Wars how, you know, there have been people that have always supported the show. I put you guys among that, you know, even when there are things you guys, you know, thought could be better or didn't like. You always acknowledge the effort that was being made to be authentically Star Wars and working with George. And that was always our goal. And we improved and improved. And then we always had our detractors. And, when you know, which is totally fair. I mean, you always get that. So I tell everybody about Star Wars. You're getting people love you and they hate you and they love to hate you. And it's great. You know, I've never minded any of that. But when you get to the end and it finally got canceled, it was almost like the most galvanizing thing I've ever seen, where suddenly everybody seemed to love it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, but sure. Wait, no, you don't. And and then they love it. And then they put on Netflix. And Netflix has been kind of the broadest reaching thing I've ever seen for that show, where people that didn't even know it was on before are now watching it.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I almost get more, yes, I get more comments in the last several like months since we've been on Netflix than I did almost the entire run of the series. I think you combine that with the fact that it's also won 2 Emmys now, so people put it in a different category in their mind. But, you know, one of the things that I always want to say one of the last things George told me, it's not like he's gone.
Right.
He's just,
sure,
he's up in the hills right now, but he's not here working with me anymore. But one of the things that he and I had talked about as far as Clone Wars was that he himself had a desire for it to exist on Netflix, because he felt that that would be a great way to get that content out there. And I mean, it just proves again that he always knows what he's talking about. I mean, he was right. It was a great vehicle for it, and it kind of has given the show, you know, a greater longevity than I think it would have had otherwise. It's really kind of interesting. But all of those ideas about storytelling, the things we learned about editing, everything we've applied to Rebels, the biggest difference for me, if you want to put your fingerprint on one thing, is I think the look. I think out of the gate, we have a much stronger, solidified look to Rebels than we ever did at the beginning of Clone Wars. Even if you see the big statues they made down at Comic-Con for the main characters, they look so much better than those first statues for Clone Wars did, which kind of was based on our clunkier, earlier CG models.
That's right.
These characters are much better flow, much better postures, softer facial features, and Killian now having worked for, you know, 10 years in Star Wars and CG animation, he's given everything a very unified look based on Ralph. We wanted to make Clone Wars look a lot more like Ralph, but it just escaped us. We weren't as educated on how to do it. And now it's like you could see stills that really just look like, I feel, Ralph McQuarrie painting. So
there's definitely not just the look, but the in the design, but also the color palette you guys have kind of running through the show.
Oh, for sure.
Those softer colors, whereas Clone Wars was very, very dark. And sometimes.
Yes. Yeah.
But this just seems, not that this is all bright and cheery, but just definitely a softer look, I guess I would say.
Well, I think too that, you know, tonally the show is completely different. We have, you know, and everybody loves to say this, we're trying to make it like the original series. At a certain point, I get kind of tired of that because I said, look, there's nothing wrong with the prequels in my mind. I love the prequels too. I just spent the better part of my career working in the prequel era, and you could tell fantastic stories in that time period. And the prequels gave us so much to the Star Wars universe. They added so much: councils, senates, entire bodies of governments, different starships, different cultures, that we only imagined were there in the background of the Star Wars universe, and now we saw them. So I would never say I'm ignoring that vocabulary at all in Rebels. In fact, you know, I'm still bridging things from my previous work on Clone Wars to what I'm doing now. But the fact is, on Clone Wars, we would do four episodes, two episodes, three episodes, four episodes, sometimes one, then three, then one back, and now we're before, and it was kind of a confusing timeline. Mm-hmm. This show is all about the same group of people. Mm-hmm. On that fact alone, it's more like the classic trilogy. Because we're saying, these are the characters to pay attention to. These are our heroes. They are running from the Empire. I mean, it's just undeniably going to feel more like A New Hope because of that. And it's not overall as dark. And yet, I take exception when fans say, well, you're making it for kids. And I said, well, of course I am.
Yeah.
I mean, are you crazy? Uh-huh. Not because I don't think adults will like it. I think adults will love it. But if you talk to George, A New Hope was made for kids. They were always made for kids. It's just, if you tell the story right, both adults and kids can enjoy it and love it. And that's what we've targeted with Rebels. Because honestly, in a way, we aged kids out on Clone Wars. It got so dark. And it got so violent.
Yeah, and it almost seemed like the show grew up with those kids.
It grew up, and then everyone was going to die because they lose the war.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't build to a happier place, unfortunately. And so this show is different in so many ways, tonally, stylistically, but it's all built on everything that we learned in Clone Wars. Absolutely, you couldn't make this show without having made Clone Wars first. It would be impossible.
Now, the way the Rebels is going to evolve, is it something that you guys have mapped out for across a certain amount of seasons, or is it something that you're just going to let grow naturally?
It's a little of both. I mean, Simon Kinberg and I, and then we work with Kiri Hart, who's had a story here at Lucasfilm. We all have a good blueprint of what we're trying to do, and you know, with a fair amount of allowing the characters to develop in their own way, and then you can't then say, I'm not going to capitalize on this new development now and add that to their character. We do have a very good idea of where Ezra is going and what he's ultimately supposed to be about, mainly because none of us want to interfere with Luke Skywalker. None of us want him or the audience to even think he's competing with Luke Skywalker. They are... You know, the way Simon and I were just talking about last weekend, if New Hope is over here on the left, it's conceivable that Ezra is way over here on the right. You could perceive of a situation where they heard about a Death Star and they heard about it blowing up, but they didn't see it. They certainly weren't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that widens the Star Wars universe where it needs to go, so that, you know, then everything JJ and them are doing are following that other path of right. What was going on, and we're on this new path. For the success of Star Wars, I think, and for its survivability, it's good to keep spreading out the character base and who people are interested in. I mean, obviously now we get a ton of interest around just Ahsoka and Rex,
mm-hmm.
and what happened to them. And I think there would be fans that are completely happy hearing just stories about Ahsoka, Rex, and Ventress, and there's a generation like, yeah, Han, Luke, and Leia, I like them too, but I grew up with these guys.
Right.
You always want to know about the people you grew up with.
And, that's right.
You know,
I think that's
the most interesting thing about this generational saga now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting to watch how it all unfolds. And, I mean, like you said, you spent most of your career working in the prequel era, mm-hmm. and now you're going back to work in that era that you grew up in.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, obviously, I mean, not to take anything away from the prequel era, but this must be a breath of fresh air for you.
It's crazy for the group of us that worked on Clone Wars. When you sit down and draw a Stormtrooper, it is not like drawing a Clone Trooper.
Right.
You know, when you draw a TIE Fighter or you, like, stage a shot with a Star Destroyer, I mean, that's the backbone of our Star Wars belief, and, you know, there it is. And so it is incredibly exciting to have those elements that we have not seen on screen in a very, very, very long time. You know, so it is. It's pretty you know, not that we needed re-energized, but it is really, I think after the end of Clone Wars, which was pretty emotional for a lot of people, we had to let go of a bunch of people. You know, I kept as many people as I could. But at the end of the day, it was still, you know, 8 years of working with a group up at Big Rock, and now we're all down here at the Presidio. So it's a complete change. So it was kind of good for us to go to make a new series. And it's nice that it's in this Star Wars that we're familiar with. And I, you know, I will say, I think I've said before about Clone Wars ending, I appreciate all the fan support surrounding it and, you know, them wanting more, but I do feel that it's probably best that it ended, you know, with kind of George's involvement in Star Wars as well. And that kind of just solidifies it as his last kind of thing. And it's nice that it's been so, awarded now, you know, for him. I just took the second one up to him a couple weeks ago, you know, and we had a nice little chat about things.
Yeah. So what's it like working without the security net?
Well, you know, by the end of it, I was working a lot without a security net. I mean, it's nice to always have George there, but I've been well trained by my master. So,
well schooled.
Yeah, I've been very well schooled. I mean, if anything, it's like a responsibility then to like try and, you know, help everybody else, instruct them on what, you know, is pretty commonplace to me. You know, and I run against some of the same objections that I always saw George run into. The joke of my life is now I have to experience what he did. I think that's pretty funny right. for him. But there are certain things that make Star Wars work and things where it doesn't work as well. And there's a thing that Pablo Hidalgo and I always say, which is like we just can't let Star Wars become like everything else. It seems like everything else wants to be like Star Wars and everything else always wants to be compared to Star Wars, which, you know, I guess just shows you how important Star Wars is. But the fact is, there isn't that you aren't Star Wars. You're just not. I can tell you what the next Star Wars is. It's called Episode 7. That's the next Star Wars. And Star Wars Rebels, that's the next Star Wars. But I think other franchises always, people like to buzzword it because Star Wars has such a quality behind it. But everything's its own unique quality. Marvel has a great brand all on their own. You know, they certainly don't need to be compared to Star Wars.
Yeah, true. And you bring up Episode 7.
I hope so.
Well, you know, the word on the street is...
yeah. There's a movie?
The word on the street is that story-wise, mm-hmm. everything is going to be interconnected. Mm. And so a lot of people speculated that we might be seeing elements of the television show Star Wars Rebels in the sequel trilogy. And I mean, I know you're not allowed to comment on specifics or anything, but is this something we should be keeping our eyes open for, to see that synergy between the show that takes place during the dark times and the movie that happens 30 years after Return of the Jedi?
I mean, I think in the case of time alone, time span, that it's, you know, direct linkage and things of that nature aren't, you know, going to be immediately prevalent. I mean, we all like the same universe. It's all the same universe. So I think there are natural ties as such. And, you know, there's always discussions on how we can make this all feel like one big piece. But I wouldn't point to anything at this point or say like, ooh, look for Easter eggs, you know.
Right.
But it is always a larger plan that we're all aware, at least, of what everybody else is doing, especially because with this many Star Wars stories, and I think it's really fascinating as a fan to look at the landscape now and see, you know, these spinoffs and movies and TV, you know, our TV show all taking shape simultaneously. It's like more Star Wars content than has ever been created cinematically, you know, speaking. That we have to be aware of what everybody else is doing, because a lot of us have very similar ideas about what we'd like to see. And then it's like, is it a movie or is that on the TV cartoon? Which is it? So we just have to be aware of each other. And, you know, I think it's a great collaboration at the end of the day.
Yeah. It would be tough, though, to connect the two, seeing there's that huge time gap in between.
Yeah, you know,
it's not like Episode 7.
Of old people, and more old people, and you know,
right? So, yeah. Right. Well, one thing that I don't know if it was of any surprise to you or any significance to you, but you know, there was sort of a cleaning of the slate as it goes with the canon, and your show was introduced as official canon. You probably knew that all along, working with George. I mean, there's really no higher authority.
Yeah,
but. Is there any added pressure knowing that at every turn what you're doing. This is for real. This is for real for these characters. This is for real for this universe.
No.
No.
Because I've worked that way since day one with George. Mm-hmm. The fascinating thing to me about this whole canon, non-canon debate, which still persists after very black and white lettering, is that there's been black and white lettering since, like, forever about this.
Yeah.
Any interview with George where he's ever talked about the expanded universe, he's always said, there are my films and what I do, and then there's everything else. Mm-hmm. And to George, only things that appeared in the movies or then later on his planned live-action TV series or Clone Wars was canon. I mean, when I got this job, he told me point blank, I don't want you paying attention to anything else, just what I tell you about Star Wars. That's why we worked at the right behind the main house. That's why we weren't down here. We weren't near licensing. We weren't near publishing. We had nothing to do with any of those groups for, like, really the first 2 years we were at Lucasfilm. It was all the George Lucas education on Star Wars, purely. And that was, you know, the six films he made. And then later he started to fold in, you know, the live action TV series into what we were doing, and evidenced by, like, when you see 1313, the game, and the clips that were released from that, well, that, you know, portal appears at the end of season two of Clone Wars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of season two, we already had that in there years ahead of it.
Right.
But it was all kind of planned together. So I've always had this stance on it, which is that, you know, I like the comics and I read the books and I know the role playing to a degree. And things that I like in there often wound up in Clone Wars. Maybe not used the same way, per se, characters or ships, but like the Lady Luck type ship makes an appearance in Clone Wars. That, you know, Houndstooth makes an appearance in Clone Wars. Because they're great designs, and I appreciate those things. George liked Aayla Secura, and so she appears in Clone Wars. He liked Quinlan Vos. They weren't exactly as they were described in the EU, but they still appeared. I personally think that avenue still exists, right? So when you have different things in the Star Wars universe, different types of starships and TIE fighters and people, it's entirely possible for them to still end up in a show like Star Wars Rebels. Will they be used exactly the same way? Maybe not, not necessarily. That's business as usual. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been making canon, you know, forever because I worked right with George. And, it, you know, like the Mandalorians, pacifists. At one time, they're warriors. Then they became pacifists, canon, you know. I always did my best to present what the fans believed in currently to him. Mm-hmm. So we would be aware what we were changing. So we were never doing anything blindly. Evan Peel, you know, you know, not around. Right. Okay, well,
right.
George Lucas thought he was still alive. He never saw him die.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. You know, still alive. And, you know, so all those decisions, it's really interesting. And it makes sense to me as a fan when people see things in a trailer and they're like, well, they put Obi-Wan Kenobi's hair part on the wrong side. I'm like, no, really? The trailer artist just flipped the shot. That's not weird.
Is that
not
a real criticism that you got? Are you serious? Believe it or not, believe it or not, I actually saw this criticism.
The design team told me.
I think somebody put it on our Facebook.
Because much as I tell them they don't need to read it.
See, I read something like that, and I'm like, I guess I don't love Star Wars.
Yeah, the design team, they read this stuff. I tell them not to, but they do. And I'm like, you can't get worried about that because they're just excited.
Yeah.
And they want to be involved in every little detail. But, yeah, I mean, for me, it's all business as usual. What's interesting is how everything now is canon going forward. Mm-hmm. So I think the greater pressure is now that if you're writing a comic or a novel, this is now canon. And I think that, like, for a lot of those authors, it has to be more that, like, you're paying attention to what the cinematic universe is doing and the tone of it and how it is so it fits, while respecting it's a completely different medium.
Right.
So we just worked with John Jackson Miller on you know, the new book we have for Star Wars Rebels.
A New Dawn.
A New Dawn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Simon Kinberg and Greg Weissman and I helped give him, like, notes on the outline and kind of the tone of the characters and things. And I actually got to make some comments on the artwork on the cover of the book, which that was very new. I had really do a lot of that on Clone Wars even. So now that book is tying into being part of our characters. So I've, you know, been reading the final book now to make sure that it all ties up. And, you know,
are you making notes? I mean, is it?
Well, it's done.
Oh, it is done.
The book is done.
Okay.
So, like, notes are passed. I had my shot at doing that prior. And I think that is the bigger responsibility now, which is that, you know, if we say this is all canon, then as creatives now on the cinematic universe, we have to, more than ever, read this stuff and stay up with it, you know, and Story Group does, so that we know and are respecting those things. Because the minute that we go back into a world of, well, I know it was that way in the book, but this makes better sense as a movie, well, then it didn't matter anyway, right?
Right,
it's
right.
Like we've invalidated it all again. So, you know, I went to the Del Rey panel at Comic-Con this year, you know, mainly as a show of support for the publishing group to say, yeah, look, see, here I am. Well, I'm not just saying this is part of it. I'm here. There's the book. We're all going forward now, but let's do this, you know.
Right.
So I'm excited about that, you know, because I think that it helps fans. And yet I talked to a good many fans at Comic-Con that are big EU fans, and you know, I totally sympathize. It doesn't mean you can't love those stories.
No.
And they're not enjoyable. I mean, I like a lot of those stories, and, you know, and I totally get what people would be frustrated with. And I would never take that away from them and say, you're wrong. No,
right.
Be frustrated. That's fine. I get it. And we'll still work to try to, like, put what we can. Like, Ventress was a major figure in Clone Wars. And, you know, and that Ventress, we're going to have a Ventress book coming out.
Right.
Which is based on scripts we wrote for Clone Wars. So
which
it's all tying
cool.
together
yeah.
now.
That's cool.
Well, we're getting the high sign. So we want to thank you for your time. And what's always great, Dave, is that you take the good with the bad. And you never run away from the criticism. You actually
go
and...
There's nowhere to
you've
run.
Tried.
It's a trap.
But it seems like you actually enjoy the spirit of debate and talking about
sure.
it. I think that's, you know, part and parcel of what makes you so special in this universe, is that you are such a fan and you can kind of separate yourself from creator and just go in and start just, you know,
I try,
having
yeah.
a debate.
I mean, let's face it. If I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I'd probably be calling you guys from the other side going, that Clone Wars show, it never gets Plo Koon right. You
right.
know?
Yeah, of course.
The voice is completely wrong.
His hair is parted on the wrong
yeah,
side.
Yeah.
You'd be that guy.
If
All
you
right.
ever find well, yourself needing that kind of outlet, you know how to reach us.
Sure, yeah. yeah. Well, I just call Kyle or Sam Witwer.
Yeah, well, hey, those guys call us too.
And
so.
Then the next hour is shot.
Yeah, yeah right, right.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
yeah.
that. Well, congratulations
right.
on a successful
so
screening
yeah.
at San Diego Comic-Con,
great
too.
Great to see you guys.
It's
see
great
you.
To see you.
I can't even believe it that you guys are here.
We got Jason so, out
I can't
here.
I can't believe I'm here.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
The force
Thank
is strong
you.
With you.
It is indeed.
So, you, man.
see, here he goes.
Divide and conquer.
Yes,
we talked about this.
Yes, now you're going to plant your seeds, so by the end of the weekend,
right?
me and Jason will be at each other's
oh,
throat.
Right?
I know that's what you're
I'm
trying to do.
I'm going to Palpatine you, too.
Yeah.
I could take Frank aside later, back by the pinball games at Rancho. I'd be like... He needs you more than he knows.
Oh,
right?
Perfect. Well
Always
played.
Two there are a master and apprentice.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we'll let you get back to work. Go
Thanks,
make some
guys.
Star Wars
I
for
will
us, please.
Go do that.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave.
Downstairs from where you are, not below here, but
right.
you know, in a secret location, not far from here.
Right. Well, if you need me, I'll be peering in the window.
Yeah,
outside, climbing out.
Yes. Here we see the Filoni in his natural habitat.
Pull the shutter. That'd be hilarious. You won't recognize me. I take the hat off when I work.
And then you disappear.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
hats only
that's
public
how you get away.
Yeah.
I remember at one point you told me we were walking through a crowd of people and you said you didn't think people would recognize you because you had on a black hat instead of a brown hat. And I wanted to say,
yeah,
yeah
that
well,
turned
dude,
out
you know...
not to be true. That turned out not to be true. It's if I take a hat off. But even now, like, that, I have to say that's getting ruined because, like, I went into a Disney store.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just standing there. It's just like a weekend. I'm in a Disney store. I want to see what new Star Wars stuff. They have some really cool stormtroopers that talk there. It's amazing.
Oh.
But the employees recognize me
mm-hmm.
because they have a video of Rebels on loop. And I'm up there all day talking.
Yes.
And then I recognize you from the video. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
You we hear your voice in our sleep.
See, Kenobio loves that. She thinks that makes her day. She
well,
goes
see,
to the buddy. Store just to see the video.
I work in PR too, and if I heard that, I would be really excited.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Hey,
so
thank
good
you,
to
man.
See
very
you.
Much.
Thanks,
good
brother.
To see you.
It's good to see you too.
It's like the
all
Twilight
right.
Zone.
It's so cool to see Dave in his natural environment. Of course, yeah. Working hard on creating, and I think I said to him as he was leaving, I said, all right, now go make us some cool Star Wars stuff. So it's just nice to see him hard at work, and especially, you know, given the, in some ways, unceremonious exit of the Clone Wars. And I think once, Jim, we knew that the fate of the Clone Wars was sealed, we still held on hope that Dave would continue to be at the helm of
Lucasfilm Animation in the sense of, you know, storytelling. He really is kind of, in some ways, one of our very last links to the purity of Star Wars storytelling, you know, vis-a-vis George Lucas.
Absolutely. Dave Filoni is the personified version of Star Wars credibility. And the folks at Lucasfilm and Disney are no fools. They recognize that. And they also recognize his talent and skills. And that's why he is going to continue to work on Star Wars. So it was really exciting to sit there and talk to him. Great to pick his mind a little bit about, you know, he still is displaying some pretty hardcore prequel love, which I know a lot of our listeners will respect. He gave us some interesting tidbits on the blueprints for Star Wars Rebels as they exist in his head. Without going into any great detail, he did reveal to us that he and Simon Kinberg definitely do have the series mapped out to a degree. So it's everything is kind of predetermined as far as the big picture goes. You know, there's a lot of individual little subplots and things like that that'll be happening that'll just, you know, appear organically and will evolve in a very natural way. But the overall big picture for this series is definitely something that's been very carefully mapped out by the creators of Star Wars Rebels, Filoni and Kinberg.
Now, don't you think that it's inevitable that the question that's going to dog Dave now at every convention appearance that he makes is, do you know what's going to happen to Ezra? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to Ezra?
Sure. Especially
just like Ahsoka.
Yeah. Same thing. I think he'll still be fielding those questions about Ahsoka Tano as well.
No doubt. That has not been, you know, the door is still open there.
Oh, wide open. And a lot of fans, of course, have anxiety about Clone Wars characters and storylines from the Clone Wars possibly being expanded in Star Wars Rebels. And I think that patience is a virtue at this point, because if you remember when we first talked to Dave Filoni about Star Wars, the Clone Wars, way back in 2008, he assured us we wouldn't be seeing Mandalorians in the Clone Wars and other very familiar aspects that did actually come into play as those episodes were released. So it's the evolutionary process. Naturally, you want to establish the new elements of storytelling that you're going to be bringing to Star Wars. You're going to want to establish that from day one and make that a priority. But you will find more wiggle room once your audience gets more familiar with the characters, the situations, the storylines. Then you'll be able to expand. And I, you know, to bring in another one of the star franchises, Trek, I think Roddenberry very famously said that you are not going to see Klingons in the Next Generation. Well, wouldn't you know it, as the series evolved very quickly, Michael Dorn's Worf became one of the main characters of the show.
Right.
So it's very easy to want to abolish the past when you're trying to establish a new present, but it doesn't take long for fans to realize what you're trying to do, and the storytelling gets easier, and then you could start bringing in other elements of past Star Wars, like maybe a character like Ahsoka or Captain Rex or Hondo Ohnaka or Boba Fett.
Sure. Well, you know, too, Jim, I mean, in the same vein, every time George would ever talk about going into some of these unexplored areas of the Star Wars universe, whether it be an animated series or it be a live action series, he was always very reluctant to commit to any principal characters appearing. And if memory serves, one of the original concepts for the Clone Wars was that it would not involve the principal characters, Obi-Wan, Anakin, etc., that it was that you would hear about them. You'd hear about these great battles happening and involving some of these legendary figures of the Clone Wars, but you would not see them. And then, of course, when the subject turned to the now abandoned, sitting on the shelf live action series, it too was going to feature characters like the Emperor and Darth Vader, but only as whispers, as you know, as chatter, and not as, you know, real characters that you'd see on screen. And the rest would involve characters that we're meeting for the first time. And I believe that that too had it, just like Clone Wars, had it actually ever seen the light of day, that it would have evolved into something where we'd see these recurring characters. So I do think that Star Wars has a tendency to always sort of come back to the basics, and whether it be Jedi and lightsabers and some of the characters that we love, that even though something may start out kind of astray or on the fringes, it eventually sort of comes together and becomes part of the whole that is the Star Wars saga.
You know, I think it's interesting you bring that up about how the live action show was going to only feature sort of whispers of Palpatine. The presence would be felt, but the character wouldn't necessarily be seen. And it takes me back to the original Star Wars A New Hope, where that was very much the case as far as the Emperor goes. He's talked about, but he's never seen. Also, Princess Leia's father, the character we'd eventually know as Bail Organa, also mentioned, but never seen. So the presence would be felt, but you wouldn't actually see these characters on screen. Now, the great thing about the original Star Wars trilogy is the fact that you did eventually encounter this Emperor that you've been hearing about. So I think that with Star Wars Rebels, if characters like, well, especially guys like Grand Moff Tarkin, Darth Vader, Emperor Palpatine, I think, yeah, you could tease them to a degree, but sooner or later, us as fans, we want to see them in the flesh on the screen.
In the pixel.
You can only tease us for so long. And that's what made it cool to be seeing, you know, Jimmy Smith's Bail Organa finally in episode 2, Attack of the Clones. You were finally seeing Princess Leia's father for the first time. We'd been hearing about him so much over the years, especially, you know, when she was arguing her point about Alderaan being a peaceful people and everything, and then boom, they get blown out of the sky. It made his loss even worse.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, is Star Wars not one of the best platforms for some of the most memorable entrances and, you know, first appearances of characters, whether it be Darth Vader? Look at Jabba the Hutt, all the build up for him, and we finally see him, and he, I think, just blew away all expectations. The Emperor also, I'll never forget, the fanfare that in Return of the Jedi for the Emperor's arrival, you know, from the very beginning when we hear, you know, Jar Jared and Vader talking about it, and Jar Jared's getting the lump in his throat just thinking about the Emperor coming on board the Death Star 2. And then finally that all those TIE fighters and Star Destroyers flanking the Imperial shuttle that Palpatine arrives on. It's just nobody does entrances like Star Wars.
Yeah, true. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, never seeing Bail Organa, but definitely Leia makes reference to her father in A New Hope. It takes me to this post from our Rebel Force Radio Facebook page by Roger Peroni, who says, in episode 4, Vader and the 501st storm the Tantive IV, and after not finding the plans, they sent out a distress signal, then informed the Senate that all aboard were killed, right?
Right.
Okay, so that means that Bail Organa and Leia's family all thought she had died right up to the end of their lives. Leia couldn't contact them, and they couldn't contact her. So Bail Organa died thinking his adopted daughter, Leia, was killed, and he never learned the truth.
Mm.
Did you ever think of that?
I never thought of that. And that's one of those lines. You know, there is something that happens, and it's not just Star Wars. It's any movie that you know by rote, by heart. And as much as we love Star Wars, it's very difficult when you know a movie so well to give it the full attention that you can when it's less familiar. And so that's one of those lines that I could have recited to you, but I probably never gave it the thought that it deserves. And kudos to our listener for sending that in to us, because yes, of course, and inform that all aboard were killed.
Right.
I, yeah.
You know, and it just has much more impact with us in the post-prequel age, knowing who the character of Bail Organa is.
Yeah, that too. That too. I mean, did we even know his name was Bail Organa? I mean, it's never mentioned. He's never mentioned by name in the original trilogy. Oh,
in the radio drama by Brian Daley, they refer to him as Prestor Organa. Prestor Organa. Huh. Yeah, I don't think it was till episode two before he finally really got that name, Bail. And then, thanks to the wonderful talents of those who retcon, Prestor became known as a sort of title on Alderaan, sort of maybe a political title or a royal title. He is Prestor Bail Organa. So that would be his full name if you applied that sort of...
It's like Minority Whip.
Minority Whip Bail. Prestor Bail Organa. But yes, in the radio drama, they refer to him as Prestor. But in the prequels, definitely as Bail Organa. And yeah, you know, I never really considered that too much, you know. Inform the Senate that all aboard were killed. Bail Organa, absolutely being an active member of that Senate, which was still intact until right after the events of the Rebel Blockade Runner Imperial Star Destroyer showdown at the beginning of A New Hope. Recall, you know, Tarkin makes it known just a little bit later in the movie that the Emperor has dissolved the Senate, just like that.
Permanently. So
that long-lasting body of government that was in that giant rotunda with their high-tech floating pods, a.k.a. weapons, if you're Emperor Palpatine, that entire organization was just shut down by Palpatine just because he wanted to do it. It was dissolved by Emperor Palpatine.
Boy, it's a shame. It seemed to be working so well.
Right? And they kept it going for like another 20 years.
So functional.
It was a very flawed system. But yet, yeah, when you put it into context, Bail Organa thought Leia had been killed in a space battle, or, you know, the way the Emperor and the Empire probably put a spin on it was that it was a reactor malfunction or something.
Right.
Informed the Senate that all aboard were killed. So, you know, I mean, with no explanation, really. Well, everyone was killed. So Bail thinks Leia was just, you know, probably died a very senseless death, when in reality she carried on his legacy quite well within the mythology of Star Wars, becoming a hero of the Republic. And then now we'll see that story expanded even more in Star Wars Episode 7.
And maybe Rebels.
So it was really cool because, I got to give a thank you to Dave Filoni for his amazing hospitality. I know he said that he was just clearing out his office of some junk, but he gave us some very generous gifts prior to our interview. He gave me a Sideshow Collectibles Plo Koon, which he probably has, you know, cases and cases of. But this is Dave Filoni's favorite figure, and he presented it.
What do you think? It's like cases of wine? Like people show up to his office and he's like, yeah, yes. here's a Plo Koon.
That's how
like the president gives out cufflinks, Dave gives out Plo Koons.
That's pretty much how he rolls.
Okay.
But Jason, he was, you know, gave you a very cool gift, and I doubt he has many of these in his office.
No, he probably doesn't. But I think he had ulterior motives, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But no, it was an awesome gift. It was something I never believed that I would ever own, and I am a Star Wars action figure collector, active Star Wars action figure collector. And a couple years ago at San Diego Comic-Con for the 30th anniversary of Return of the Jedi, they released, I think it was a dozen or so figures in a Death Star 2 package. And this was a part of the vintage collection, but they all had Revenge of the Jedi cards. And some of these, I think maybe, yeah, all but two were eventually released to the stores. You know, they were kind of a chase thing where you could buy the Revenge of the Sith Revenge of the Jedi or Return of the Jedi cards. But there were also two minifigures that were included in this set. One was Salacious Crumb, carded, but on a mini card. And there was the Death Star. No, not the Death Star droid. The mouse droid. The mouse droid from the Death Star on those little mini cards. This thing is almost as tall as I am, and wider than I am, and it's an awesome, awesome set. I was really blown away by Dave's generosity there, and as a figure collector, I was really it filled a huge gap in my collection. Getting it home, however, was a challenge.
More on that later.
Yeah.
You want to stay tuned for that story, folks. But it was so nice of Dave to give us that gift. And then we got another gift after the interview itself, where we actually were able to see the first 7 minutes of Star Wars Rebels, the very first episode. It's the same thing that was released on Disney XD following the repeat of Phineas and Ferb earlier this week, Phineas and Ferb Star Wars, which is a good show. I watched that with my kids, and they enjoyed it very much. I don't know anything about Phineas and Ferb. I've never watched the show before, but they did a very clever Star Wars tribute show. So we enjoyed that a great deal, and then they followed it up with the same 7 minutes that we saw at Lucasfilm. And, to see you and me, Jason, it was so cool to be with you on the hallowed grounds where Star Wars is actually created and be able to get our first taste of Star Wars Rebels. And it was a very exciting debut. There's no doubt about it. People have been buzzing about it on our Facebook page and writing blogs and, chatting up in forums about, some early feelings that they have about this series. And from what I'm seeing, from what I'm hearing coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, and from the material that we've actually seen ourselves, I can honestly say that I'm very excited for this series, and I know fandom on a whole is really embracing it because it captures the classic Star Wars vibe in a very, very strong way.
It does. I mean, from the very first shot where you see the tower where we meet Ezra there on Lothal, it just feels like Star Wars. There's something about the color palette that they use. There's something about those soft Macquarie concept colors, and that's the only way I know how to describe it. Ralph had a very distinctive style. I'm hardly qualified to describe it, but all I can say is that there's a softness to it, a lightness to it, and whereas Clone Wars at times seemed very, very dark, visually very dark, not unlike the Bruce Timm Batman animated series, where they actually went so far as to actually create paint the animation on black backgrounds as opposed to white or clear backgrounds. So Rebels isn't like that. Rebels, there's a brightness to it. There's an airiness to it, not necessarily to the story, but to the visuals. It just felt very, very much like I was watching a series that somebody like a Ralph McQuarrie might have had a hand in designing. The characters are just instantly, I think, relatable. Look, it's going to be impossible for you to watch the first 7 minutes. Anybody who grew up when I did watching Disney movies and not look at Ezra and think Aladdin, but that starts to fade away. It's not Aladdin for very long. You have a street kid, an orphan kid. You can think Annie, you can think Aladdin, you can think Newsies, you can think whatever. Obviously, I'm in the musical vein right now, but there's only so many many places it can go. But what I'm saying is it very quickly breaks out of that and becomes something really, really exciting. And again, the characters instantly relatable, and the chemistry between them becomes apparent very, very quickly. And that's immensely hard to do. I mean, there are live action series that take a whole season for you to really start to feel the relationship to and in between the characters. And I felt that this got it right away.
Yeah. And, there are just elements, so many elements of the the 7 minutes that we saw that really strike home for me as a Star Wars fan, most notably as a Star Wars fan who has loved the Clone Wars too, by the way. It's great to see that, you know, the Kevin Kiner soundtrack definitely does call back to John Williams, but you hear the Kiner sound as we've grown accustomed to it in the Clone Wars just as much, in my opinion. While they're not going down certain roads that might be unique or outside the box, because it remains very much embedded in the John Williams sound, it still has the upbeat vibe that I think Kevin Kiner brought to the Clone Wars.
I think that there's a musical vocabulary, just like there is a sound effect or audio vocabulary and a visual vocabulary. For Star Wars, there's a language. And as much as I think George and John Williams himself might feel that some of these themes belong to certain characters, in some cases they're named after them, they have for us, I think, as Star Wars fans, actually sort of gone on to mean more than just an entrance of this character or that character. They are, as Paul Bateman years ago pointed out brilliantly, it is the oxygen of Star Wars. And I, as brilliant as Kevin Kiner was in his work on the Clone Wars, it always left me wanting more of that familiarity. And it really does help, I think, put you into... Jim, it's just like when we would see trailers for the Clone Wars, and they would repeatedly use the classic Williams music in those trailers. And the trailers always felt a little bit more authentic in some ways than the series itself because of that music. It just really does get you in the zone of Star Wars.
True, and the music is used so well in Rebels, but yet there's also some serious restraint shown with the music too, which I think is very important in establishing that original trilogy vibe, because George Lucas was sort of getting a documentarian feel when he was shooting the original Star Wars, and that all came down to the editing. And the music editing was a big part of that, where he would let long sequences, if you watch A New Hope, he'll let long sequences go and breathe without having that soundtrack music. However, in the last 5 years, 6 years, watching Star Wars and Clone Wars, we've come to grow used to a Star Wars that has wall-to-wall music. Watch any of those episodes of Clone Wars, and you will notice that there are very few moments in that series where you are not hearing that musical background. However, in Rebels, there's a lot of restraint being shown, where you actually are having sequences, long sequences, that don't feature music in the soundtrack, or might let sounds like that classic speeder bike sound sort of dominate what you're hearing for the moment. So the music comes and goes. And that's something that I appreciate as an audiophile, is sometimes less is more. And we have a little clip here from the preview, and you will notice that right away, that the soundtrack is used sparingly in this particular sequence at a marketplace on Lothal, featuring some Imperials beat up a fruit salesman. You know, here's a guy just out peddling some Jorgen fruit, by the way, which is a callback to the Clone Wars, if you remember that.
yes.
Infamous Droids Spa episode where they were out looking for fruit for the cake. But the fruit does make a comeback. The cake does not. The fruit does here in Star Wars Rebels. And this is a great little sneak peek. Sort of gives you a really good idea of what the vibe of the show is going to be all about. Imperial oppression and the weaker on the scale when you deal with the mighty Empire, and then just some, you know, simple people living on the street, and the type of impact that they have on what basically comes down to is bullying and intimidation. And these are all trademarks of the Empire. But as you see the Empire grow, you'll also see the rebellion grow too here in this clip from Star Wars Rebels.
Your identification now. I'm just trying to sell a couple of Jorgens here.
All trade must be registered with the Empire.
I remember what it was like before your ships showed up. Before you Imperials ruined Lotho like the rest of the galaxy.
This is LRC-01. I'm bringing in a citizen under a charge of treason.
Copy that, LRC-01. Dispatch to cell block AA-33.
Take him away.
You can't do this!
Oh, yeah. Well, who's gonna stop us? You? You?
Hey, Mr. Asperiogan.
Move along, Lothrat.
Sorry, not looking for trouble. But it sure is a way of finding me.
You just hear at the end of the clip the strains of the music starting up. So, yeah, Jim, I love this. This is where the ambient sounds of the setting definitely take center stage. You really can focus in on the drama, on the dialogue. I just now that you point that out, that does harken back to the style of the films, and certainly the original trilogy in particular.
Yeah, it kind of helps with the rhythm of the whole thing. It slows you down at the right point, and then kicks in when it really needs to accentuate the action happening on the screen. And that is definitely a Lucas editing technique that he had perfected over the years, and we saw it in American Graffiti, we saw it in the original Star Wars, and now we're going to see it again in Star Wars Rebels. So just these little efforts to pay attention to that kind of detail is something that I think is going to make Star Wars Rebels a very impactful show as far as when it's all said and done and we're looking at its place within the grand mythology of Star Wars. We're going to see how it sort of falls in line with everything else and have a good appreciation for it.
You know, I couldn't help but think when the fruit seller says, "I remember what it was like before your ships came." That's very similar to the comments that we would hear from inhabitants of planets when the Clone Wars descended upon them. There were many that said, I remember what things were like here before the Clone Wars or before the Republic brought their war to us. Yeah. In fact, many times it was the Republic being blamed for the war more so than the Confederacy.
Yeah.
So it just was kind of interesting that they're still, it's basically saying the same thing.
Well, it's, the treacherous web of Palpatine just keeps expanding and becoming more and more complex as it spins around the galaxy. And that just, kind of shows you what kind of strategist the guy was and how he was able to just weave all these different layers of oppression upon the general population to where they accepted him. Because he made them forget about all the horrors of war with just like immediate reparation. But then as he sank his teeth, the claws of the Empire sank into these innocent civilizations and populations. It became very clear that, it's meet the new boss, same as the old boss. You know,
right.
It doesn't get any better. So very exciting to see finally a nice solid chunk of this show. I'm salivating for the opportunity to check these episodes week after week. You know, Jason, not only am I salivating for the future of Star Wars Rebels, but I'm always salivating for Little Debbie snacks, especially Cosmic Cupcakes. Yep, you guys saw this coming from a mile away because we do it each and every week here on RoboForce Radio. We give away a Little Debbie Galactic snack back to anyone who posts something cool mentioning Little Debbie and their Cosmic Cupcakes, along with RoboForce Radio on Little Debbie's official Facebook page, or you tweet at Little Debbie and you include RoboForce Radio to be eligible to win a Little Debbie Galactic snack pack, including those new Cosmic Cupcakes. Little Debbie, of course, always the official snack cake of Rebel Force Radio. And this week's winner of a Little Debbie Galactic Snack Pack from the Facebook, it's our friend Jason Weatherly. Loyal RFR listener Jason Weatherly says he's enjoying a nice cup of calf with a yummy Cosmic Cupcake on a rainy day.
Hey, by the way, calf is no longer canon. Just so you know.
It's just legendary. But look at the cool coffee mug he has.
No, that's canon.
That's R2-D2 right there. So sans dome, but filled with delicious coffee, and he's got a big old box of Cosmic Cupcakes. So guess what, Jason? You are getting an even bigger box of Little Debbie. You're getting a Little Debbie Galactic Snack Pack delivered right to your house. And that's all just for simply supporting Rebel Force Radio and Little Debbie. We're giving away Little Debbie each and every week here on Rebel Force Radio. So be sure to say it loud and say it proud on social networks everywhere. Your love of Little Debbie and Rebel Force Radio.
All right. As I said, we were busily prepping, laying the groundwork for our host duties of the behind-the-scenes stage at Celebration Anaheim coming up in April 2015. While we were doing that, news broke that Dave Filoni is the first confirmed guest for Star Wars Celebration in 2015, happening April 16th. Through the 19th, as I said, in Anaheim, California. I'm sure Dave will be there, as he is the executive producer on Rebels, to bring us up to date on all the news that he can. I mean, at that point, he'll have a whole season under his belt, most likely. So we'll probably be asking Dave all kinds of questions that he cannot possibly answer about season two. But nonetheless, Dave never disappoints. By the way, we've mentioned this on the show many times. If you're going to be at a panel with Dave Filoni and you have a cute, adorable child, let the kid ask the question. You stand a much better chance of getting it answered, because Dave's got a soft spot for the kids. It's a lot harder for him to tap dance around the younglings. But anyway, very happy to hear Dave. Very appropriate that he is the first official guest confirmed for Celebration. I'm sure the first of many, many more to come. And we're looking to look forward to seeing him and hearing all that he has to talk about there at Celebration.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that Dave has the soft spot for the kids and the kids don't have the soft spot, because that would make them really young to be asking questions.
Jeez. I suppose so. Well, we'll be bringing you up to speed on all things Star Wars Celebration here in the coming weeks and months, but we just couldn't resist. We love this theme song and what it has come to mean to us here at Rebel Force Radio and Star Wars Celebration. So keep it tuned right here to Rebel Force Radio for all the Celebration news and updates.
Awesome. So we couldn't go to the home of Star Wars. We couldn't go to Lucasfilm without having a sit down with the dude whose stage we are so gratefully inheriting at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim 2015. That's right. We got a few minutes at Lucasfilm with Pablo Hidalgo himself. And we just kind of wanted to pick his brain a little bit about, number one, the cool facility we were hanging out in, and just some other things that's been going on in his mind as someone who has definitely got his finger on the pulse of the future of Star Wars. Plus, I think we want to kind of weasel a few tips on how to host the behind-the-scenes stage from the guy who has been running it for the last few conventions. So me and Jason were escorted into a pretty cool little conference room, and shortly thereafter, Pablo walked in, sat down, and we had this cool conversation with Pablo Hidalgo live at Lucasfilm.
All right, so normally when you have a transition of this magnitude, the former president, the outgoing president, leaves a note in the desk of the incoming president. Nothing that grand, but rather than a note, we've got the former host, now former host of the behind-the-scenes stage of Star Wars Celebration, here to bestow what he's learned over so many previous celebrations. Pablo Hidalgo, right here in Lucasfilm.
Yeah, we're actually sitting in Lucasfilm.
In the conference room for the public relations.
Pablo, I know what you're thinking. How did they get past security?
You guys have badges on, so right, so clearly right the flaw in the system is higher than it should be. If you actually have badges on.
And they look legit, too, yeah, don't they?
Right.
Yeah, Jason was up pretty late last night, and he was working hard to try to make it look
It's the
authentic.
Nerd equivalent of the fake ID, of the, you know, it's
My
the Lucasfilm.
To your color copy.
Hey, before we get into talking about Celebration and everything, tell us a little bit about this facility here at the Presidio. It's known to you guys commonly as LDAC, mm-hmm. which is Letterman Digital Arts Center. Mm-hmm. Who is Letterman?
that name is kind of inherited from what used to be on this space. It used to be the Letterman Hospital, which was part of the Presidio Military Campus here. Uh-huh. So, you know, there's enough landmarks in San Francisco that still refer to this area as sort of Letterman, so that name stays on the label. But because it's often just acronymized, that is not a word. Don't use that word, kids. as LDAC, a lot of people just assume the L stands for Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm. I thought
For years, you know, there's a bus that goes by here, just transit bus. And those buses have like just an automatic voice that tells you what the stop is.
Yeah.
And it's only just recently, even though we've been here since, I don't know, before 2005, even before that, it's only just recently that the buses have rolled over their announcements. So it stopped saying Letterman Hospital, next stop.
Oh, finally. Yeah. Finally, they caught up with the times.
It just says Presidio.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think most fans just refer to this as Presidio Park, and that's where you guys are located. And so before you guys moved here in 2005, where were you working out of?
We were all kind of scattered. I mean, I was part of Lucasfilm, you know, and so as a result, I was at Big Rock Ranch. Mm-hmm. And previous to that, we were at Skywalker. But Industrial Light and Magic, and at the time, LucasArts, were on other campuses mm-hmm. up in San Rafael. Mm-hmm. And so when we all moved into this facility, it represented the first time all those bodies were under one roof. And we were able to, you know, just like ILM artists were just down the hall as right. opposed to down the road, you know.
Now, was that a distraction for you?
Not at all. It was actually kind of fun because, like, you know, because of my coverage of the prequels and all that, I had actually got a good relationship with mm-hmm. some folks at ILM, and just being able to say hi and see them on a daily basis was a nice touch.
You know, it's really interesting to think back at all the coverage you did internally for the prequels, so we as fans could follow along with it. You know, we were talking earlier, me and Jason, about the webcam you had out on the set yeah. and everything, but now in the sequel era, mm-hmm. things have kind of changed. It's a little more locked down than it used to be, isn't it?
It's a combination of factors. I mean, obviously, it's ultimately the director's prerogative on what they want to reveal because they're the storyteller. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a factor. But another reality that people kind of forget is this is the start of a new story. By the time I was covering episode 3, we were wrapping up a story.
Right.
There was less to reveal that was new. Mm-hmm. Like, we were more in a position to say, okay, this is what Hayden is up to, and this is what Ewan is up to, because everyone had already known who those actors were and what characters they were playing. So it was much more easy to communicate, this is what's happening today, well, without revealing anything, as opposed to right now, we're really in a much more of a episode 1, episode 4 kind of equivalency, mm-hmm. the start of a new trilogy where these new things have to be properly introduced.
Right. Yeah, with the upcoming films, episode 8 and 9, the secrecy will be of a different kind, I think.
Well, I think it'll be much more like these, you'll have much more playing pieces in mind. Mm-hmm. You'll have a better language of what this trilogy is. So you could actually converse about it.
Right,
as
right.
As opposed to everything has to be defined properly.
Right. Everything's a mystery right now. You know, the simplest character names are unknown. Mm-hmm. You know, beside Mark, Harrison, and Carrie, mm-hmm. got a pretty good idea of what they're.
Who are
their?
I was going to say, like, what characters are those?
But you,
Mark, Harrison, and Carrie.
But you know what I'm right. saying. I mean, we don't even know simple names at this point. So everything is a mystery. Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is we have a lot more concurrent things going on. And, well, we're all very excited about what's going to happen in 2015. You know, there's a lot of stuff mm-hmm. that's going to happen in 2014 mm-hmm. vis-a-vis Rebels and things like that. And we want to be able to talk about those things and give those things the spotlight they deserve as we move towards the launch of that series as well.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, what's kind of funny is we had to stop right there.
Yeah, we were interrupted.
We were interrupted because we got word that Dave Filoni wanted to meet us downstairs in the lobby at Lucasfilm to hear us out about what we thought of the footage we saw from Star Wars Rebels. So immediately we all got up. Pablo came with us, and we went down to the lobby.
And sure enough, Dave showed up. He brought along Joel Aaron with him, who is the head of CG for Lucas Animation and Star Wars Rebels, and animation director Keith Kellogg, who is much taller than I thought he would be. you know, you see these guys on the DVD extras. It's very cool to meet them in person. And I told Keith, I said, yeah, I've seen you on the DVD, so I'll see you before you see me.
Yeah, right.
But it was really great to kind of be part of this impromptu focus group right there at the Lucasfilm campus to discuss this really fresh video that, you know, the majority of Star Wars fans had yet to see. This was definitely before it was released Monday as part of the Phineas and Ferb Star Wars repeat on Disney XD. And of course, everyone could see this footage now online. But it was fun to talk about it. I think, Jason, the first thing, because Filoni, you know, he really wanted to know what we thought about it. I think the first thing that you and me both agreed upon was the fact that we ended up liking the character of Ezra a lot more than we thought we would.
Sure. I think that anytime you're creating, and David mentioned this, a kid character in a show where you're expecting not just kids to watch, it's tough. It's very easy to make them, you know, to get the eye rolls from the grown-ups watching it and, you know, making them too precocious or too bratty or too brash or whatever. And I really felt that they got it. I think they hit the sweet spot with this character. I think he's going to be a hit with kids. And I think that, you know, old fogies like us, we're going to like watching his evolution and his emergence as a force, a little pun there, to be reckoned with in the Star Wars universe. I think he's going to become a favorite. And I was surprised too, Jim, you know, how much I enjoyed him. And in Kanan too. I was probably going in with lower expectations about Kanan than I was about Ezra, because I knew they'd really be working hard for Ezra. They want him. He's got to go over with the audience. And I thought, well, maybe they're just going to make Kanan a very cardboard cutout Jedi, just kind of generic. But he's anything but. And I really, really enjoyed it. So it was fun to kind of give Dave our take on it. I was, of course, flattered that he even cared, frankly, what we think. And also to have Joel Aaron there and Keith Kellogg. And what was really fun about it, Jim, is they were kind of hanging, you know, on every word. I think that they, at that time, they haven't really received a whole lot of feedback. There was the screening at, for those that were lucky enough to be there, at San Diego Comic-Con. But aside from that, I think they were really anxious to start getting some feedback. They've been working on this show for a couple of years now, and so, or at least a year. And so I think that they're just now just busting to hear what people think about it.
True, true. And it's very promising. And I think they've already received a lot of very promising feedback. So I hope that just adds a lot of fuel to the fire. So it was really cool hanging out in the Lucasfilm lobby, of course, meeting Keith Kellogg for the first time. And that's a voice I hope we'll be hearing on Rebel Force Radio as we ramp up toward the premiere of Star Wars Rebels, because we've never really talked to Keith ever about, you know, the animation that he brings to these incredible Star Wars programs. Of course, Joel Aaron, one of my favorite behind the scenes guys in all of Lucasfilm, one of the nicest and most talented dudes, and Dave Filoni, you know, enough said. So we wrapped up with Dave. He very busy guy. I mean, my God, his assistant was out there, and that's when I knew the conversation was over. So we split, went back to the elevators upstairs with Pablo to continue our conversation with him. And as we were on that elevator ride, things finally did start to, you know, prioritize as far as why we were there to talk to Pablo. And that is, we wanted to get some Star Wars Celebration hosting, stage hosting advice from the man whose stage we are inheriting. So as soon as we sat down in that conference room, that is right where the topic of conversation went.
So what advice do you have for us?
Treat your stage crew nicely. they're lifesavers. I mean, yeah. they're great. It's what's amazing is how quickly you form a bond with your crew
Because yeah, you're putting on a show. You're putting on how many shows a day, essentially, if you look at each panel as a show. Well, I mean, I ended up with, I think I averaged about 20 or so by the time we were done a celebration. Wow. And, you know, you just form a great bond. And you realize, like, everyone's there to make sure that the attendees, the audience, the fans have a great time. So whatever you could do to work really well together is great.
Now, did you have to come out and rap or sing a song or throw out T-shirts or anything like
that? No, they do that for you.
They do that? Yeah, okay, yeah. Good.
No, it's you know, the stage crew and the volunteers will help hand out stuff. And then, honestly, this is how homemade this thing was. Like, I would bring my own iPod from home with music that I wanted to play in between the sessions and stuff. So,
yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
I have an iPod.
Yeah.
I'll hook us up.
I got one, too. So all we need is the stage presence and the knowledge.
And content.
You know, Pablo, I think maybe there are some listeners who might be a little bit confused as to why we are going to be hosting the behind the scenes.
Oh, I know there are some. I've seen the tweets.
And you aren't. So maybe you could, because I have no idea either. Why aren't you returning to the stage?
I love doing it, but it was honestly a realistic assessment of what my time commitment would be. And I wouldn't want to do a stage hosting gig, essentially, if I didn't put the amount of time I would want to put into it. Yeah. I wouldn't want to do like something that just I didn't feel I had polished or had, you know, made it the most it could be. That said, I'm totally up for, you know, doing a panel or two. And we could talk about that.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea of doing the whole stretch, because there's a lot of homework you got to do. There's some preparation. Sometimes I bring in the AV. I bring the images. I do the research. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't have the time to do that.
Wait. We were just going to win. what are you telling us here?
Well, you do what you feel is right.
You must do what you feel is right.
But, I mean, yeah, no pressure, guys. But you know, the reason I started doing it, and this is not to disparage anyone who has done it before me, but I would often attend these panels, and I would often be in a position of like, oh, you know what? You should ask this next. Or you should, you know, you would do that mental commentary in your mind. And when the host didn't follow up on those questions, because frankly, they just didn't have the knowledge that I had about the subject matter. So they didn't follow up and dig that story that I knew existed just beneath the surface, but they didn't. I would be like, oh, that's a shame, because I know that would be great. And then it occurred to me, well, why don't I ask Mary if I can do it? Because this is what I want to do, right? And that's how it worked for, I think, what I ended up doing, 3 celebrations or so. And when I told Mary, I broke the news, you know, I'm like, sorry, Mary, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it for the next show. I said, but I think I know who would do a good job at this, because from listening to you guys over the years, I know you have that rapport and you do the research and you know the knowledge and you could fish out the stories that are just beneath the surface. So that's, I threw your names out. Yeah. And,
oh, so you're responsible for this.
Yeah, totally, ultimately. But, you know,
so we owe you a great deal of
And also Chris
thanks.
Hardwick wasn't returning calls.
Right. Indeed.
But how about some favorite celebration moments over the years on the behind the scenes stage? Does anything kind of jump out at you as something that was like just a really special moment?
There's been some great times. I mean, having Warwick Davis, I did a panel with Warwick Davis. I think it was the last one we did in Orlando. Was great because one of the things we do at ILM here, we do this thing called Flex, which is that's FLECKS. There's a story behind that, but I won't get into it. And essentially, we watch a really bad movie every month. And we do kind of the mystery science theater thing. Like, you're just encouraged to interact with the movie. And we had done Leprechaun in the Hood. And knowing, you know Warwick has a good sense of humor because all the stuff that he does with Ricky Gervais and all that. So I have to tell him that we do this. And rather than tell him in between the panels, I just ended up talking about it on the panel. And I got him to commit to coming to a screening should we ever do one. Now, of course, he's probably said that just to move on. But it was great to be able to broach that inside subject there with him, and right. Everyone here, the Flex regulars, were just like mind blown that we talked about it there. And then the other stuff we love doing, I mean, you know, by being on the stage shows, you get to shape the programming. And so I'm often in a position to say, you know what I would like to see? I would love to do this. And I've been fortunate enough to have that space to do that. So, my buddy Tom Spina up there in New York, who is like the reigning authority on the
Cantina from episode 4, and he does amazing restoration sculptures. And any, basically any time in the last 5 years, if you've seen the Cantina on screen in a TV ad or some sort of online video, he and his crew have built it, and
like
it looks
like Nike commercial.
It looks absolutely amazing, mm-hmm. right? And
was that Nike or Adidas?
There was a Volkswagen spot. Yeah, and Adidas.
It was Adidas.
But the Adidas one was different because what they did is inserted people into the original footage.
Right.
The other one that we're talking about was one where we actually reconstructed the Cantina.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But so he and I have been geeking over the Cantina for years and years. So it's like, well, let's do the be-all and end-all of Cantina research panels. And so we did, like, we took 90 minutes to talk about the Cantina with all these photos and research. And what I loved about it is we had Nick Maley, who was part of the British makeup crew. And we had John Berg, who was part of the U.S. makeup crew. Right. And these guys had obviously admired each other's works because they were on different ends of the production. Mm-hmm. But they never actually met until we brought them together during that panel. And they just, you know, clearly there was a lot of affinity. And they became friends. And it was like, wow, cool. That's amazing. You know?
That is cool. Yeah, my brother attended that panel and said it was phenomenal. He said it was just one of the highlights mm-hmm. of the entire weekend.
It's a highlight for me, and I was like, you know, we put it on, and we would have done it if there was no one in the room, you know.
Right.
But it was like it was really well received. And then another one I did it again. This was just an example of, you know what, I want to do this, and it wasn't timely. There was no reason to do it in terms of what was happening with Star Wars and the brand or whatever. It's like, you know what, I've got the space, so can I do a tribute to Brian Daly? And so we just kind of – it was me and Jim Lucino, and we just talked about, you know, Brian's work on his Star Wars novels, his non-Star Wars novels, the radio drama. And it just ended up being like a really kind of intimate discussion about this guy, this amazing author, and the fans who were there just really appreciated it because clearly there were fans who knew what it was going in, and then other people who had never read a word that he had written, but, you know, were just – they got to see what we thought about it.
And he, of course, is your favorite Star Wars author.
He is, yeah. So it was totally self-indulgent, but at the same time, it's like, you know what? I'm here. How many hours? Let's do this. So.
Yeah. Does the behind-the-scenes stage give you the flexibility, the freedom to go kind of niche and then also, you know, more mainstream with the programming?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, there's a... it's easy to paint a sense of rivalry between, you know, the big digital stage and David Collins and the kind of catering he gets or something. You know, it's like, but that's all artificial. We're all into this and we're all fans, but, you know, clearly they get the stuff that, you know, can pack in so many more people. But at the same time, I get a sense that we really get the devoted folks who really want to know and really want to go in depth about some of the stuff that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Hardcore.
Yeah.
That's what we like. And that's what we're all about. So it's going to work out perfectly. Well, we certainly hope that you'll find time to stop by.
Oh, certainly. I'll be there. And
maybe even participate. We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah. I think so. And I have a feeling that my buddy Tom is probably thinking about, hey, can we do another super in-depth panel? And let's talk about it.
That would be fantastic.
I sure would.
You know what I like about you, Pablo, is that you work in Star Wars each and every day. You came in as a fan, and you remain a fan.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know this for a fact because you still do the Star Wars role-playing games. I know there was, like, a big get-together in L.A. a few months ago.
Right.
Was it at Sam's house, Sam Witwer?
It was at Sam Witwer. He was the GM for our Star Wars RPG session.
Check this out. Yeah, role-playing game with Sam, and who else was there? Kyle?
Kyle couldn't make it.
Oh.
He was supposed to make it, but he is so jealous that he couldn't make
David.
It.
David?
Dave Collins. In terms of folks that you'd recognize from the Star Wars community, Collins was there, and Claire Grant was there,
mm-hmm.
and myself. And you know, it was, you know, we were just a total... old school nerdy fun. So.
And so you're the pardon me for being absolutely ignorant about role playing games because I've never played.
We need to correct that.
I would love that. I'm just always in the wrong place at the wrong time. However, back in 88 or 89, I got off the Star Tours ride, the original Star Tours ride in Orlando, and went into the gift shop, and I came across the West End Games source book, and I was like, finally. Because Trekkies always had so much source material to look at, reference material. And as Star Wars fans, we didn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now all of a sudden, in the pages of this one singular book, there were things about hammerheads. We learned what their species was, right. What planet they were from.
Schematics for an X-Wing.
You know, Greedo had a species, all this species we all of a sudden learned about. We were looking at blueprints for the Millennium Falcon. And I was like, this is a treasure trove. But then there were little boxes that had rules and numbers and, you know, things that happen when you roll dice. And I had no idea about it. But that's something I'd like to get into. But just thinking about how that really is what jump-started everything that followed in publishing was those source books for those role-playing games.
Yeah, and it was a time when no one was into Star Wars. Like, right. And you felt like if you got into it, it was just your island of you and maybe six friends, and that's it, right? Yeah. That is a very special time in fandom for me, because that was like when I started... I had been a fan from the beginning, but that kind of rekindled the interest in it, and it became the first opportunity to really do homework on Star Wars, because before everything wasn't really filled out. And so, yeah, like 87, the original Star Wars role-playing game, I picked it up, and we played for years and years. And, you know, it's a lot of people think, oh, it's a game. Like, I'm not really into that kind of game. Ultimately, like, it's a storytelling tool. Like, it's like if you've always wanted to tell a Star Wars story, but writing isn't your thing, drawing isn't your thing, you should give this a try, because it's an interesting way to tell a Star Wars story.
Is there a winner?
No.
It's
not a
I was going to ask you who won.
No, it's not a competitive game. Ultimately, the objective is to collaboratively tell an interesting story. So, yeah.
Totally not what I thought.
Yeah.
And I could imagine with that crew in L.A. a few months ago, the story
they got very creative. You know... And it's
walls could talk.
What's funny, and it's completely by accident, but like, so the original incarnation of the role-playing game, the parameters were basically, since then the role-playing game has expanded, you could do almost anything in it, but the parameters of the original game was you and your friends make up a small rebel crew, maybe with a ship, and you're doing your part against the Empire. And here we are, how many years later, with Rebels about to launch, and it's the same dynamic, right?
Are you telling me that this was the result? The Rebels is the result of some role-playing game from 95, 96?
I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is there's a great feeling of familiarity on my part, because it's like, wow, this is where it all kind of started for me, telling these kinds of stories. I'm not saying or intimating in any way that we're retelling any existing stories, but it's got that same flavor, you know?
It is. I mean, it kind of, not to bring up the Trek, but you did already.
Sorry.
But it kind of is like when you get back to the basics with a crew on a ship exploring, and there's something very elemental about, in Star Wars, that ensemble family feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and just a small group against an overwhelming threat, you know?
Yeah, right.
And you just never give up in the face of that. And
that's the whole spirit of
it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well,
man, I mean, the hospitality you guys have shown me and Jason today here at Lucasfilm headquarters has been just incredible.
Yeah.
And it's been so good to be able to come out here and see Pablo in his natural habitat.
My element. Please don't tap the glass, guys.
Keep your fingers away from the cage.
Well, I'm sure we'll be picking your brain a lot between now and April, to the extent that you'll let us. And so we would certainly appreciate that. And if, again, the feedback was always very positive about the role you played in Celebration, and I know that you'll be missed, and we'll do our best to step in and keep the stage warm for you.
Yeah, big shoes to fill.
You guys are going to do great. You're totally going to do great, and I can't wait to see it.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Pablo.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
So the torch has been passed to a new generation.
Yes, it has. The lightsaber has been handed off. Pablo's a great guy, and he's such a valuable resource to the making of Star Wars, and it's great to see he's continuing and thriving in the new environment as we ramp up into the sequel trilogy era of Star Wars. Great stuff.
All right, before we go too much further, want to take a brief time out and thank our friends at Dorkside Toys. Please check out what's in stock this week and available for pre-order at dorksidetoys.com. Best way to get there is go to shotglassdigital.com, click on the Dorkside banners, and boom, like hyperspace, you'll be transported right there into the store. You can also join them on Twitter, Google+, Facebook for more toy news, new stock, sale and pre-order alerts, movie news, trailers, and a whole lot more.
They've got the brand new Black Series 3¾-inch Wave 4. They're selling fast, especially Bastilashan and that Snowtrooper Commander. Don't miss out on them. The new Rebels pre-orders, very much in demand. And that new Anakin Skywalker and Clone Trooper Black Series 6-inch figures. They're arrived, but they're in very small quantities. More are on the way, but you better get those orders in right now. The Black Series 6-inch Biker Scout and Jabba Deluxe also be arriving shortly. So, again, get those pre-orders in. That's the only way to guarantee that you're going to get it. They also have Saga Legends Mission Series, the big Jumbo Kenner figures, which... they're really going to town. We were at Ranch Obi-Wan. I realized just how many of these suckers have been released. So now's a good time to catch up on those and everything else at Dorkside Toys. Again, go to shotglassdigital.com and click on that Dorkside banner.
Absolutely. You know, I love Dorkside, and I did get some of those cool new action figures that you're talking about, Jason. The Bastilashan, the Snowtrooper Commander, delivered to my house. Mint packaging. Perfect. And it's such a great deal. So, I mean, it's Dorkside for me, or I'm not running out to stores and stuff. These guys make it so easy for me. So I love them. Everybody knows Rebel Force Radio. After the Pablo interview, I think we were pretty much ready to get out of there and head up north to Rancho Obi-Wan. And we're going to be talking all about that much later. But I do want to talk a little bit before we wrap things up on this edition of Rebel Force Radio. I want to talk about day two, because that was kind of tour day for you and me, Jason. We started off with a really nice breakfast at Rancho Obi-Wan with Steve Sansweet. And then...
these are the most secure buildings on Earth. The White House, the Pentagon, the Kremlin, and George Lucas's Skywalker Ranch.
Linus laid the whole thing out in fifth grade.
What's your game plan?
We storm the ranch or we die trying.
This is a suicide mission.
All right, it wasn't quite that... well, I guess it kind of was a suicide mission. You never know. Were we going to be accepted? Or were we going to be thrown out on our arses? No, not at all. We had a great time at Skywalker Ranch. Began with some lunch with a couple of friends there. And then a tour of the grounds, which included the main house and Skywalker Sound and Gym. You'd been there before. That was a first for me. And some of the things that jump out at you is just what an amazing eye for architecture and detail that George Lucas has. I mean, we know that famously he has orchestrated and designed and handpicked so many of the things that you see there, from the placement of the buildings down to the glass in the windows. And so everywhere you look, you know, it's the house that Star Wars built. It's the house that George built. And it's just impossible to walk around there without really feeling the presence of George Lucas. Now, we didn't know this for sure, but we were pretty much assuming George wasn't there. He certainly didn't come out and greet us. But I think it's safe to assume, with everything going on in George's life, new marriage, new baby, that he's probably got better things to do than be hanging out there at the ranch right now. And we're told that he's splitting his time between California and, of all places, Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. I went out there while he's out here.
Right.
And he's the one changing the diapers this time. So
how the tides have turned.
But, you know, we did get to venture into the main house a little bit and visit a lot of those rooms that we've seen on television and in documentaries, DVD extras, and even Oprah Winfrey specials. And we really got to, like you said, you feel the presence of creativity in the air, and you understand what built this incredible facility. It's just so beautiful out there, and it does breed creativity, too, within yourself. We did get to go into the room, the conference room, the main conference room right there off of the main foyer, which has been famously seen in many documentaries about the Clone Wars. And
it's where all of those great story meetings that you see footage of with George and Dave and yes. the whole writing crew, where they're just banging out stories. And there's that famous clip of George just laying out the kind of the nature of the Force.
Yes.
And he was famous for these moments where all of a sudden he would just he'd get on the he'd start preaching about the Force.
Let's do this. We've never taken that audio from the Blu-ray. It's a audio from a video shot at a Clone Wars writing meeting.
Season 5, I believe it's on.
Yeah. And George is in there talking with Filoni. And I believe if you look around the table, you see producer Cary Silver. You see George's daughter, Katie. You see writer Christian Taylor. And George is really, for the first time ever, at least captured on microphone or film, talking about basically the essence of the Force, his fundamentals of what makes the Force tick. So we're going to pull that audio and really dissect that if we can in a future episode here of Rebel Force Radio before the summer ends. But I got to tell you, Jason, as we were standing in that room, even though George was not on the property at the time, I think both you and me sort of started hearing his words in our ears as we stood there and we imagined what he would say to us if he actually came across us in this particular room.
I want you to get out of this office right now. I don't want you here. Out.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to not hear those words ringing in our ears as we stood around that conference table, that hallowed ground of
out
Star Wars knowledge.
I want you to get out of this office right now.
You know, okay, so that dialogue that you're hearing was actually recorded in the room I'm speaking of that me and Jason were standing in.
That's right.
It's from the Robot Chicken Star Wars. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was the second one. And it's during some bonus features with Seth Green and the crew from Robot Chicken sitting there. And someone brings up Mara Jade. And that brings this reaction from George.
I want you to get out of this office right now. I don't want you here. Out.
And you thought I didn't like the EU.
So, you know what? It was an incredible day at Skywalker Ranch. And Jason, I'm so glad you were able to visit. Of course, if you're listening to this show, you can't exactly, you know, pick up the phone and call the ranch and say, give me a tour. So, I mean, you know, all the years we've been working on this show, we've developed some friendships within the Skywalker Ranch itself. And we're just, you know, really grateful that, you know, hopefully by us going there, we can kind of take our listeners with us as well. So we, you know, always want to bring you guys along for the ride. We'll have some pictures of this incredible trip up on our Facebook page for sure. Me and Jason left Skywalker Ranch, returned to Lucasfilm, and we had a tour of ILM. And Jason, I think both you and me were pretty excited by that because we knew as we were walking through there, those digital wizards were actually working on Star Wars Episode 7 at that time. And I don't know about you, but I was trying to sneak a peek here and there.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to peek at, but yeah, I was too. I was hoping there'd be, you know, some sort of opportunity. But no, they've got that under lock and key. But you know, just the idea of being there at that time, I it's hard to imagine a more exciting time to be walking through the halls of Lucasfilm. With so much Rebels Episode 7, maybe even some pre-production happening on one of the standalone films.
Oh, you know it. You know
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. So much Star Wars being made under one roof. I don't think we've ever seen a time when there's been so much Star Wars creative coming out of Lucasfilm. And to actually be walking those halls knowing that that's what's going on behind those doors doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, it doesn't. Wow, man. It actually gives me the goosebumps a little thinking about it. So it was a wonderful time. Thank you to everyone at Lucasfilm for your incredible hospitality. Me and Jason went in and did a little tourist action down at Fisherman's Wharf, had dinner down there.
A little seafood.
little seafood. We saw food and we ate it.
Indeed.
Yes. And then we had we went on back to Rancho Obi-Wan, and that's where we hung out for a majority of the time for 3 days. And we have a lot of great stories to tell about that. Next week. That's right. What a tease. Yeah, but we are going to be going into great detail about our amazing trip to Rancho Obi-Wan. And we'll even have a conversation with Steve Sansweet himself here on Rebel Force Radio next week. I cannot wait. But we cannot sign off this week without honoring one of our traditions.
This is Billy D. Williams, Lando Calrissian. It's time for the quote of the week.
Hello, what have we here?
It's just me, Billy D.
And don't mess this up, man. Be smooth.
Lando's right.
Billy D.
Sorry, baby, it's just business.
Why, you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler.
Works every time.
And Lando Calrissian is forever.
All right, Billy D, quote of the week. And, Jim, this one was inspired by a surprised... That we had at Skywalker Ranch. We didn't realize it at the time, but Matt Senreich, one half of the duo there behind Robot Chicken, along with Seth Green. Matt was hanging out at Skywalker Ranch with his family, and he took a moment to say hi. It was great to see him again and reintroduce ourselves. And it reminded you that Billy D had made a recent appearance on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, that's right. It was really cool to see Matt, and Matt is up there. He was just up there to relax with his family, so I don't want anybody reading into this thinking that he is working on a new Star Wars project or Star Wars.
He's directing Episode 7, right from Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah, JJ has stepped down.
Yeah.
But no, you know, Matt, he's just like us. He's unclear on the future of Star Wars Detours. Obviously, those guys put a lot of work into it, and we hope to see that someday. But he was just up there to relax with his family, and it was great seeing him. And when I saw him, instantly something, you know, clicked in my head, because whenever Billy D makes a television appearance, or even a feature film appearance, we hear about it almost instantaneously from you, the Rebel Force Radio listener. And my email lit up last week telling me to check out the latest episode of Robot Chicken because Billy D gives us a quote of the week. So when I saw Matt, I brought that up to him. And whenever we talk about Robot Chicken, of course, Robot Chicken is featured on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. So if anyone has kids listening to Rebel Force Radio right now and you're sensitive about certain language, maybe it's a good time to shuffle your kids out of the room or pause this episode. Or if you're a kid listening by yourself, don't tell your parents. And parents, don't tell your kids. But no, hold on 1 second before we kick off the clip. When I mentioned to Matt, so Billy D was on the show this week. Matt said to me, oh, the bitch pudding episode. And I was like, what the bitch? What? And so I had to look it up online and I found it. It was a special episode of Robot Chicken. I don't know if this is a recurring thing they have on their show, but it's called Bitch Pudding. And it's like strawberry shortcake on the wrong side of the tracks, let me just say. And I can't provide any other setup for this next clip that we're going to hear, but this is from Seth Green, Matt Senreich, and the wacky minds at Robot Chicken from the Bitch Pudding Special. Here's Billy D. Williams.
Even on cloudy days, Pastryville always had a ray of sunshine, and her name was Granny Graham Crackers. Remember when she knit your favorite scarf, Black Cherry Pie?
I wear it every day, Raspberry Parfait.
And Fudge Turnover, remember when she fixed your leaky roof?
She got a heat stroke and fell into the hedges.
While you watched Tango and Cash on Netflix.
Yes, while I watched Tango and Cash on Netflix.
Wait a minute, what was this character? Fudge what?
I'm sorry, but Billy D played the character of Fudge Turnover on Robot Chicken's Bitch Pudding Special. brought to you live from Pastryland.
Oh, that is good stuff. That's good stuff. It's hard to imagine. I mean, maybe Fudge Turnover, but it's hard to imagine Billy D just doing this.
I watch Tango and Cash on Netflix.
I think Billy D's watching something else on Netflix. But it's good to see that Robot Chicken, they're keeping Billy D at working, keeping him primed, keeping him ready, so that when the cameras start to roll on episode 8, Jim, as you predicted, about halfway through that film, we're going to see the return of Lando Calrissian.
Yes, sir. He may or may not be Baron Administrator of Pastryville.
Probably not. Probably not. But if you've got a Billy D quote of the week you'd like to send us in here on Rebel Force Radio, please email us. Show at rebelforceradio.com. Subject line, Billy D. Well, that's going to wrap things up for our first recap of our big trip to San Francisco. What an amazing time. As Jimmy said, thank you to everyone at Lucasfilm. Thank you especially Dave Filoni, Pablo Hidalgo, and all of you that for your awesome support and hospitality and open arms to us here at Rebel Force Radio. It was we had the time of our lives. Thank you so much. Also, be sure to join us next week. We'll actually break down our trip to Rancho Obi-Wan and have our interview with Steve Sansweet recorded right in his office, surrounded by the most incredible collection of one-of-a-kind, unique, and, just everything you can imagine. Star Wars. Just, you have to see it to believe it. And it is official. It's the world's largest Star Wars collection of memorabilia. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Dorkside Toys and Little Debbie Snack Cakes. We really appreciate your support. Couldn't do the show without you. If you'd like to play with us in between shows, that email address, show@rebelforceradio.com. Voicemail 708-320-1737. Make sure you check out all of our programming at shotglassdigital.com. And those Rebel Force Radio t-shirts, they're available at shotglassdigital.com.
Yes.
All right. We'll see you next time. More of our recap of our big trip out west coming up next week. But in the meantime, for Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
I watch Tango and Cash on Netflix.